who have studied Western Dharma, especially also in Bangladesh, in ashrams and in homes, and then they will often tell me some different stories of Bhakti's ancestors, which of course are very wonderfully enlightening and instructive also. So the idea grew in my mind of making a more extensive biography of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati even to that day being compiled, based on the idea of the Prabhupada Lilamrita. Probably most of you are familiar with this small book called Prabhupada in Russian, but actually the original book in English is a very big 6-volume edition with many anecdotes of Prabhupada. So I thought to compile such a book on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Now, there are already several biographies published in Bengali and one in Oriya language also. And one of the Bengali editions has been translated into a very poor kind of English. However, I found that these biographies, they were mostly collections of dates and places and events, which was also nice, no doubt. But it didn't leave such a strong impression as the Prabhupada Lilamrita did. No, because through this, so many different anecdotes, we really felt that we came to know something about Prabhupada as a person. Siddha Pragya Sikha Bhasha Samadhi Stasi Krisha Siddha Di Kim Pragashi Takima Siddha Vajri Takim. In Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna asks Krishna about the symptoms of the self-realized person. How does he talk? How does he say? How does he sit? How does he walk? He wanted to know what's a self-realized person, what's he actually like. Now, of course, a self-realized person cannot be known simply by describing or analyzing him. There's a very interesting thing that Bhakti Saraswati Thakur once said to his disciples. Because naturally, as his guru, he was always speaking and instructing them. Ami bhakti tumra shuncho kintu anadaya mabde ekta pakchalajati. He said that I'm speaking and you are hearing, but there is a gap between us. Not simply a physical gap, just like in between me and you, there's a space. A gap of consciousness and realization. So as Hari Shankar was saying last night, that people say about him that, well, Hari Shankar, he knows Prabhupada, but as far as he's concerned, I don't know Prabhupada. Jananta eva janantu kimba bhuktana me prabho manasaro bhakasaro bhacho vaila vantara bhuchara. Lord Brahma said about Krishna that some people may think that they may say that they know you. Let them speak like that. But as far as I'm concerned, neither by bodily, vocal, or mental activities is it possible to understand your knowledge. So like Krishna, he's killed most of the people. To know him, especially for persons of very limited consciousness like ourselves, we cannot know them. Nevertheless, by beginning to know them, by hearing about them and trying to follow in their footsteps and seeking their blessings, then we can begin to know them. And such persons can introduce us to Krishna. Such persons come to this world to introduce us to Krishna. It is impossible for us to understand Krishna by any other means except by the mercy of the great devotees. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was a ray of Vishnu. He came to this world to pick up devotees, to pick up conditioned souls and bring them back to Godhead. You can see he had a tremendous impact on the world. The disciples, I met many of his disciples who were still living at that time. And even though Saraswati Thakur had passed away long before, it was obvious that he was still in such a major influence in their lives. I met several of his disciples. In the same manner, the Prabhupada Lilamrita, one of the main methods of collecting information for that was interviewing Prabhupada's disciples and others who had had interaction with Prabhupada. So I thought to use the same technique. I had to find out the few disciples that were still remaining, of which there are maybe only 4 or 5 in the world at the present time. Now, there were various difficulties in collecting this information. Apart from the difficulties of finding out who the disciples were and where they lived, and the various difficulties in tracking them down and going by train and bus and rickshaw and horseback and foot and so many ways to try and find them. But
One of the main difficulties was that most of the disciples I met had had very little association with him. It's just like most of Prabhupada's disciples didn't actually have much personal association with him. They didn't see him very much. And many of them who were, you can imagine that these were the last who were still present in this world. So many of them had joined when they were very young, and shortly after they'd been initiated, Saraswati Prabhupada passed away. So many of them didn't know much more than what was already written in various books. And that was, of course, that was another of my sources of knowledge, was going through the... There's a lot of literature in Bengali either written by him or about him. Yeah. So I consulted some of that, but there's still oceans more. Huge, huge volume of literature.
Yep.
It's still untranslated. So anyway, I was conducting these interviews. Another problem is that several of the devotees I met, they didn't want to talk to me about this. Many of them, when they wanted to talk to me, they didn't want to talk to me at all, or they wanted to talk about other things. I'd ask them about Saraswati Thakur, and they'd speak for 1 minute, and then they'd go on and talk about something else completely different, and I couldn't find the subject. I actually found the household of devotees much more accommodating to me than the sannyasis. For some reason or other, it was family. So anyway, I was going here and there, and I was getting a few odd anecdotes here and there, until one devotee in Mayapur, directed, who's from Katak in Orissa, he asked me, well, have you seen Dr. Shekhar Prabhu? And I said, no. So he told me, you go and see him, he'll help you. So I went to visit him. He had joined the monk at a young age when he was 16. And actually, Rocky's son, so sorry, he, as he did with many young boys who joined the monk, he took special care of them. And he had been very affectionate to some to Jyoti Shekhar. There's in Jyoti, not Jyoti. Jyoti means life, and Jyoti is the Oriya Kambangali pronunciation of Yati. And it appeared that he'd been a very observant young boy, and he had kept his eyes open and ears open and seen so many things and heard so many things and remembered so many things. So he was sitting at home and chanting Hare Krishna. And all his family, I mean, after leaving the mat, he'd become married, and all his family members were all devotees. Every evening, his family members would join together and chant songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. They all knew all the songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur by heart, and that's quite good, because there are a lot of songs. So he was, at first, he was a little hesitant, but after some time, he understood my purpose. But I explained to him what I wanted to do, and then he was very happy. I told him I want to collect anecdotes that people have personally seen, that you've seen, you've heard, your own personal interactions with Saraswati Thakur. I said I want to publish this for the benefit of the world in general and the Vaishnavas in particular. It will be very valuable and instructive. So Jyoti Shekhar Prabhu told me, yes, I can tell you many such anecdotes. So I sat down with him under the thatched roof of his temple. Temple means his home temple, small. And for about 2 hours in the morning and 2 hours in the evening, for 3 or 4 days, he told me so many things. And I would ask questions and prompt him. And he understood my purpose, and he didn't go off the point unless I asked him about some particular thing. But he would concentrate on just giving one story after another, after another, after another. So after 3 or 4 days, he said, okay, that's all for now. You come back again after some time. And when I went away, and after a few months, I came back, and he had written down a whole list of so many things. Yeah. So in this way, I visited him maybe 8 times, 10 times, 12 times, and for a few days at each time, and each time he would tell me so many things. And once he took me to a place in the middle of the Mahanadi River outside Katak, where there's an island, and on the island there's a big rock where you can see the imprint of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's foot. And we had many discussions also. He was a lifelong follower of Ananta Vasudeva, who's probably the most controversial figure in Gaudiya Math history. Probably the most controversial. Anyway, there was much discussion on different points of philosophy based on that, from his following of Ananda Vasudeva, and the controversial, some controversies. So on certain points we had very severe differences of opinion, but nevertheless we were united in the purpose of wanting to broadcast the glories of Saraswati Thakur. Once he said to me that, he said, He said, I'm like a merchant who has got the goods, and you are like a train who will bring them to the required place. Once I was discussing with him, and he happened to mention the name of, in the course of his speaking, he happened to mention the name of Bhaktivinoda Babaji. So I remember I'd seen the name of Bhaktivinoda Babaji Maharaj in a calendar, Vaishnava calendar, but I didn't know anything else more about him than that. And no one else that I'd spoken to also, they also didn't know anything about him. So when he mentioned the name of Bhaktivinoda Babaji Maharaj, they said, do you know anything about Bhaktivinoda Babaji Maharaj? So, yes, he said in English. So I said, well, could you tell me something about him?
Yes.
And the result is that book on Bhaktivinoda Babaji Maharaj. He'd actually written a book himself in Oriya about Bhaktivinoda Babaji Maharaj. And he personally translated that into Bengali in handwriting for me, because I don't know Oriya, but I know Bengali. And that and the extra anecdotes he told me form the basis for the book, which I think many of you know, about Bhaktivinoda Babaji Maharaj. So, of course, what he told about Bhaktivinoda Babaji Maharaj is much less than that about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Vast resources of information about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But most of it is in old magazines and old means going back to the 1920s and 30s. The Gaudiya magazine especially, which was Upkick, means a fortnightly magazine, published by the Gaudiya Mutt at that time. So this and other sources I've been researching over these years. It's been a long time since 1989. But at some point I thought I should publish the book instead of just going on researching and researching. So hopefully when I get back to India in a few days I can work on actually getting it printed, as the final proofreading is supposed to be going on now. Now, one interesting thing about, I was saying there were various biographies published, and there's one interesting point about them, is that most of these biographies were published by different sects, or different, what we might call, stunda groups of the Gaudiya Mutt. So although the basic history is the same, it's presented somewhat differently in the various biographies. You'll find in one biography that such and such a devotee is the great hero, who did everything for Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and others were simply rogues, or they're simply their names and not mentioned at all. Whereas in another group's biography, the ones who are represented as the rogues, they are the heroes, and the heroes of the other book are the rogues, or they're not mentioned at all. They simply don't exist. Because after Saraswati Thakur passed away, there was severe infighting within the Gaudiya Mutt. As Saraswati Thakur told his disciple Abhay Charanaravinda Das, who we now know as Srila Prabhupada, he told him, Agun Jalva, fire will burn. He was talking about the Gaudiya Mutt. He said, the fire will burn, the fire of sectarian interests will blaze up and consume the mission. So practically that happened.
Pratishyata Pradushlo.
And after Saraswati Thakur passed away, there were two major groups who fought with each other, and there were court cases and physical fights and a few murders also. So a very bitter feeling was generated. Therefore, the biographies that were written, they were very biased actually. So it was very difficult for me to. You can imagine it's very difficult for me to get actual subject or objective opinions or objective analyses of what actually happened during that period. Even if an incident happens, if you ask five different people 5 minutes later, you'll get five at least slightly different versions. So you can imagine what it's like asking people more than 50 years after the event. Plus, people's memories tend to be influenced by what their opinion is. So, it's a very sensitive subject writing about Saraswati Thakur. Because whatever you write, various followers are going to be displeased. Unless you write a completely biased account, then everybody will be displeased. If you write a biased account, then one side will be pleased and the other side totally displeased. And if you write, if you try to write a balanced account, then both sides will say you're favoring the other side. So, notwithstanding that, I took up the difficult task of trying to write a biographical Rasa Vipul. It's not really a biography plus a biographical work on Saraswati Thakur. Now, before I start telling anecdotes, let's try and see the background in which Saraswati Thakur was present and preaching. We've all heard how Saraswati Thakur was uncompromising and strict and stern. He was a fighter for the truth. He didn't believe in compromise even slightly. He said, "He who compromises is finished." Now, we very much admire his austerity and his strictness and his firm determination to only stick to the truth. But we may be surprised, why was he so strong? Was it really necessary? There seems to be a certain difference between Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. One of the differences is being that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his writings, he pointed out the effects of wrong philosophies and misrepresentations of Vaishnavism. But in his personal dealings and his preaching, he was very polite with people. And even his writings, although he pointed out the defects, he was quite relatively polite about it. According to the well-known saying of Manu, Satyam Bruyat, Priyam Bruyat, Ma Bruyat, Apriyam Satyam. He said that, Satyam Apriyam, he said that Manu writes that one should speak truthfully and pleasantly, and one should not speak a truth, even if unpleasant, one should not broadcast it. One should not marvurat satyam apriyam, even if it's unpleasant, one should not broadcast an unpleasant truth. Saraswati Thakur, he didn't adhere to that, not broadcast the unpleasant truth. And like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he didn't make friends with people who were misrepresenting Krishna. He did not adopt any indirect means of presenting Gauri Vaishnavism. In English, there's a saying to call a spade a spade. Do you have a similar saying in English? You could call a spade a manual earth-lifting instrument. If you call a spade, it's very clear what it is. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to openly say that people are rascals, fools, nonsense, like father, like son, his spiritual son, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada had the same propensity. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he made many enemies. You can imagine if you call people rascals and cheaters, and even more so, if people are cheating others and making plenty of money out of it, and if you point that out and then their cheating stops, they'll be very upset to lose their money and their prestige. But let us try to visualize the situation in Bengal and in India at that time. Intercontinental train travel. A plane travel. The railway network was a very modern introduction. Even the radio was very new. Jagdishekhar Prabhu, who lived in Cuttack, told me that at that time when he was a boy, there was only one radio in the whole of Cuttack, radio receiver. That was the capital. Well, no, not at that time. The world was ruled by the British.
Миром правили британцы.
Means they were dominant in the world in a way which it's not comparable even to America at the present time. They were directly ruling most of the world. And India was considered the jewel in the British crown. India was very much more traditional then than nowadays. Although India in general and Bengal in particular was going through many cultural changes due to the influence of the British, and most of the young Bengali intelligentsia, they were educated in English medium, and under the British influence, they considered their own culture inferior. They were much enamored by Western, and particularly British literature, art, religion, philosophical outlook, and so on. Now, apart from that, even among the Bengalis, even without their British influence, the cult of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was considered very low class. In India, the concept of high class and low class is very much part of the culture. I think not so much in Russia. It's all one class, communist, low class, lowest class. But that concept is very much there. Even today in India, people, they immediately when they meet someone, they want to know what his name is, what his educational background is, and all that, and then they put him in a slot. He's in this class. They mentally put him in a slot. So among educated people or high class people in Bengal, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement was generally considered to be that something for very low class people. Now, actually, historically, many people who were considered low class were brought into Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yena yena jato chilo harinami ubharilam. Those who are very fallen, they were lifted up by the holy name. And one of the particular contributions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is that he made Krishna consciousness available to everyone, regardless of caste. So many high caste people, they didn't like this. That we should, you know, we're from high caste, then why should we be considered on the same level as these low caste people? And many low caste people took to Krishna consciousness, being attracted by the chanting of Hare Krishna, and also being attracted by the social egalite that he offered. But in course of time, for various reasons, actually because the leaders of the Krishna conscious movement themselves became corrupt, therefore the cult of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu mostly became corrupted. Going against the whole teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, certain persons from the Brahmin caste claimed for themselves the hereditary right to be gurus. Donations and respect from their disciples and giving them spiritual instruction, therefore everything deteriorated. So they didn't mind to tell people, yes, it's okay, you can eat flesh and you can do whatever you like, just keep on giving me money and I'll give you donations, and you'll all be happy. So this was a major form of deviation within Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. And there are also persons who misrepresented Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's exposition of the highest love of Radha and Krishna to fulfill their own karma lusts. So there are many people claiming to be Gaurya Vaishnavas, but who are actually simply lusty rascals. And they invented such things as, for instance, Kishori Bhajan. Kishori means a young girl, and Bhajan means a process of worship. As Krishna is famous for consorting with the Raja Kishoris, which means the young girls of Vrindavan. Mm. So certain rascals, they would also do their worship using some certain Kishoris. And in this way, introduced illicit sex into the cult of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because illicit sex in India at that time, and even at present, is socially reprehensible in India. So their trick was to disguise illicit sex as a highly religious act. But naturally, more discerning people abhorred this. So Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur appeared as the Raya Krishna. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, he was preaching Krishna consciousness. He was the first to turn the tide away from the disparagement of Krishna consciousness by educated and more cultured people. Disparagement means putting it down, speaking against it, being against it. Disparagement. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the first to turn the tide against the disparagement of Gaurya Vaishnavism by the educated and cultured people at the time. But he prayed to Krishna that I can't do this work alone. You please send your representative. Of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself is a representative of Krishna. But in his humility, he prayed for another representative to come. The acharyas, they're very kind. They don't do everything. They leave some work for us to do, the next generation. So Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur appeared in answer to the prayers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, own son. And from the very beginning of his life, he demonstrated intense devotion to Krishna. At the age of 5 years, there's a well-known incident where Bhaktivinoda Thakur brought some mangoes to his home, brought from the bazaar. And the young boy, Bimala, that was his name at home, Bimala Prasad, he took one of the mangoes. Bhaktivinoda Thakur used to worship Giridhari Srila at home. And he chastised the young boy that, why are you taking food that's not offered to the deity? Don't you know that's an offense? So the boy vowed on the spot, I've made an offense, I will never eat mango. At such a young age, he had such a sense of Krishna consciousness. And he stuck to that vow throughout his life because of that unknowing mistake as a young child. And actually, people would bring gifts to sadhus, and fruit is the very common gift to bring to a sadhu. And mango is the king of fruits. So during the season, naturally people would bring mango. But he would say, no, I am an offender, I cannot take it. Even if there was an offense, just for the sake of argument, let us say there was an offense, that had been wiped out hundreds and millions and billions of times by his preaching and his his firmness in the notion of service. But he considered, no, I cannot do it. And this is called nishtha, firm determination. So this was the background in which Sarsar Thakur appeared. Probably most of you have read that book, Ray of Vishnu. Who has read that? Yeah, that's actually the main body. The biography in that book is 95% taken from one of the biographies I was saying, which was published in Bengali and then translated very poorly into English. So that was re-edited and put in better English, and that is the basic substance of that book. So I won't tell much from that book, but having given some background, starting from tomorrow, I'll start to tell some various anecdotes. I'll tell one or two now, just to give some idea. But, one headmaster of a school came and asked him for initiation. Of course, in those days, headmaster of a school was a very highly respected person, because the teacher means like a guru, and there weren't so many schools in those days either. So this teacher happened to have a long beard. Some of the sansas or tablas said, yes, you can take initiation, but you have to shave off your beard. Some of you said, well, you know, I've been growing my beard for a long time. And he said, so Sarsar Thakur, you have to decide which is your priya. Priya means that which is very dear. Your beard or Krishna? So he chose his beard. He didn't take it. It's a good test. He generally insisted that, at least for initiation, male devotees shave their heads. It's a good test, because generally people are attached to their bodies, and especially to their hair, as it's mentioned in Bhagavatam. Lavanya Kesha Dharana. In Kali Yoga, people will be very much attached to their beautiful hairstyles. Another time, I think that one person approached Sarsar Thakur and said, why are you telling us so many difficult things? Because Sarsar Thakur, he was preaching chant Hare Krishna and follow four regulated principles. Actually, he only told anything and follow the regulated principles, which included no eating of meat, fish or eggs. Now, often when I was traveling in Bengal, people told me, in our home, we never eat meat or eggs. They considered that to be very good. But they didn't say we don't eat fish. They only said meat or egg. Because Bengali people are very attached to eating fish. There are many rivers and ponds in Bengal, and it's free food. Very nutritious and very tasty. And Bengalis like it very much. So this, and when I say very tasty, I don't mean that you should eat it, but Bengalis seem to like it. Personally, I think it stinks, but you know, wherever you are in Bengal, at midday you smell this fish smell. But you know, Bengalis like it very much. I don't. Don't think that I said it's tasty. I'm eating fish. But so anyway, this man is saying, why are you telling us so many things, difficult things? No eating fish. So why don't you give us an easy process, such as chant Hare Krishna, eat fish, and be happy? Well, he didn't say that, but that was implied. So Sarsar Thakur said, you are fallen in the well. So I'm giving you a rope so to pull you out. And why do you want to try and pull me in? You can imagine if someone's falling in a well, someone sells a rope to try and pull it out, but instead he tries to pull the person down with it. So there are many such little anecdotes. And Krishna willing, I'll tell more tomorrow. As I said, this is all going to be made into a book, Krishna willing. It should be published soon. In the meantime, I'd like to advertise two of my books, which I have here.
So
it's Prasad, all right. Someone bought for distribution?
Yeah.
All right, well, we have some prasadam for distribution here. So I guess I can do that now, if you don't want to come and take some prasad. I distribute prasad. Somehow I can make the devotees happy, then I'll get my blessing. So please bless me, take some prasad. And if you don't have these books, please encourage me to take these books also. And we also have slasa just now coming. Zafra. Zafra. Hare Krishna. Hindi may baat kar rahe hain. Can you tell us? Speed may be anything. Translate that?
No.
And jadi aapne bangla jaane bangla bolo kintu ruski jaane.